Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration will come to order. We do have a quorum present. Representative Baker, did you get a chance to review the minutes?
I did, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the minutes from April 24th, 2018.
Thank you. Representative Baker moves the minutes. Any discussion, comments, questions, changes? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes are approved. Members today will be moving revisions to our House policy against discrimination and harassment, moving the R-17 resolution, and then taking care of a couple of housekeeping items. The Subcommittee on Workplace Safety and Respect heard R-16-2 and R-17 resolution and came back with a recommendation that both be adopted by the full Rules Committee. So first, I'll move that R-16-2, the House policy against discrimination and harassment, be adopted. And we'll start by having Ben Weeks and Christina Para from House Research give a walkthrough of the changes to the policy. So if they could come to the table. Here they are.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. Ms. Para is waiting on an amendment deadline for the Ed Bill, so she is not going to be here today, just me. So I'm just going to walk through the changes to the R-16-2, which is the House policy against discrimination and harassment. And just in general, we'll start with the introduction. On line 1, page 1, rather, line 13 through 15, along with line 24 through 26, these are an attempt at a clear and affirmative statement of the goals in the policy, which was a recommendation of several testifiers before the Subcommittee on Workplace Safety and Respect. The intro, in general, it is an attempt to highlight the scope of the policy, who is covered and where, make it clear that discriminating harassment by and against members and employees in the course of their legislative work is covered by the policy, and then it makes several other changes just for clarity, changing some things that were in the passive voice into the active voice. Moving on to the scope section, which begins on 2.12, we delete a section stating that the policy is not intended to provide greater protection than the law. This was in the current version of the policy, and again, several testifiers before the subcommittee recommended that a policy be more aspirational rather than just track the anti-discrimination laws. This reiterates here the policy scope, including specifically highlighting that the House will investigate reports of harassment or discrimination by third parties against House employees and members, and will act within its power on the results of those investigations. And those changes are from 2.22 to 2.31. Also, on page 3, we explicitly provide that interns and high school pages are included within the definition of employees for the purposes of the policy. Also on page 3, specifically 3.22, we add familial status to the list of protected characteristics under the policy, and this tracks a change in the Minnesota Human Rights Act since we last adopted a new policy. On 4.22, and then again on 5.14 and 5.15, we changed some type that was either all caps or all caps and bolded just to normal type. Again, this tracks a recommendation from a testifier. Previously in the policy, it highlighted the fact that an element of sexual harassment is that the behavior is unwelcome by bolding or all capsing that language, and we've just put it into normal type to emphasize everything equally. Moving on, under the definition of sexual harassment under the Minnesota Human Rights Act, which is copied verbatim in the policy, we add specific language that says under this policy, conduct need not be severe or pervasive or meet the severe or pervasive standard that's in current law to be actionable under the policy. And moving on to the retaliation section, which is now on page 6, starting at 6.66. This is largely identical to the retaliation section that was in the current policy, but we moved it up in the policy further to the front. It was near the end before. And we also added some language to make clear that not only those who have reported harassment or discrimination are protected against retaliation. As it says in the policy, a number of actions are protected from retaliation, including opposing harassment or discrimination, complaining of, reporting harassment or discrimination, participating in an investigation, testifying or being a witness in an investigation, or associating with a person or groups of a different protected class status. And then under the House Responsibilities section, which begins on the end of page 6, but is mostly on page 7, the policy now requires, or would now require, that we make the policy readily available to members of the public. That's at 7.1 and 7.2. It also requires a list of those supervisors and members to whom reports specifically can be made to be posted along with the policy, and that's on lines 3 and lines 4. And it specifically expands training requirements to non-supervisory staff and members. And under the supervisor responsibility section, beginning at 7.16, but specifically on 7.21 through 7.23, we now require supervisors to have the facility to engage in productive conversations about the policy and related processes, which was an expectation under the old policy but wasn't explicit in the policy itself. On page 8, the section that's currently called complaint is now called concern report or complaint. And this section was rewritten rather extensively to encourage a broad view of what may constitute a violation of the policy and to encourage reporting and the sharing of those reports with the House Human Resources Department. And that's from 8.11 all the way through 8.33. Then on page 9, under the section headed investigation of a complaint, there's some substantive changes in there. Specifically, the House HR director now can, on her own initiative, hire an outside investigator. The policy would require that when there is an outside investigation, the House counsel will, where appropriate, provide a lessons learned type document from the investigation. And those changes are on 9.22 through 9.26. Also, investigation of an allegation of a violation of the policy against a member must now be reported. The results of that investigation must now be reported to both the speaker and the minority leader. And that changes on 9.27 through 9.29. This section also clarifies that ongoing issues can be brought to the attention of beginning on page 10, also has a change that clarifies that ongoing issues can be brought to the attention of any supervisor, speaker, majority leader, minority leader, HR director, or employment law counsel. Previously, it hadn't been that broad a list. And then on 10.9 and 10.10, we deleted language that said other options might be used instead of the procedure under the policy, and now the suggestion is that those things might be used in addition to the policy, and that would be things like consulting with your own lawyer or submitting a complaint to the Department of Human Rights or the Federal Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And that's the summary of the changes, Madam Chair.
Okay, members, is there any discussion or questions? The policy, Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What would you consider to be the biggest changes from status quo as contained in these policy changes?
I can ask Mr. Weeks to follow up too, but I think there are three that are pretty fairly large changes, and I would say the severe pervasive language to say that we don't have to be held to the same standard as the legal standard, as you know, which is a much higher bar. I think that's pretty significant. And then I would say the section where it allows House Human Resources to hire counsel if they start an investigation and they decide that they want to bring in outside counsel. They don't have to get permission from any legislator or the Speaker of the House or anyone else. They can do that. They can use their judgment to do that. And I think that's significant because it takes the partisanship out of it, regardless of who the leadership is at the current time. I think that we need to trust our nonpartisan staff to be able to determine whether something rises to a level of an outside investigation. I think that's pretty significant. And then I would say the third piece, when that report is complete, potential report is complete, that it goes to both the speaker and the minority leader, again, in an effort to make sure that that's not a partisan issue. And, of course, they both have to be confidential, as is required under our current policy. But I think that's helpful because then it's both sides have the information. It doesn't matter if who's the speaker and who's the minority leader. Both sides will have access to it, and I think it takes the politics out of one particular party being able to suppress information or not have to share information. So I would say those things, along with the fact that the policy itself was just written to be in a more affirmative voice generally, and then just a lot of, for the members who were on the subcommittee, we had a ton of recommendations, small recommendations that we did too, such as taking off highlighting certain words, which made it seem like they were more important, moving some things around, moving the retaliation section towards the front. And so I think those are kind of the overall changes to this.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So this is the first time we've talked about this in committee since Representative O'Neill and I presented our proposal. Let me ask you this, Madam Chair. When it's presented to the speaker, as required, I forget which second that is.
Page 9.
Which line is it again?
9.27 to 9.29.
Okay. Speaker, Minority Leader. So are they compelled in any way, either by policy or legally, to do anything with the results of that investigation?
I don't believe so, but I think I'm going to turn that over to our official legal counsel, Mr. Weeks.
Madam Chair, Representative Lesch, they're not specifically required to do anything with that under the policy. The discipline of a member, if there's a violation, is the same. It would be under the rules of the House and the Constitution.
So Madam Chair, essentially then the next step, if anything were to happen, would be for an ethics complaint to be filed. If any action was going to be taken at all, at least within our body, is that correct?
Mr. Weeks?
Madam Chair, Representative Lesch, an ethics violation, there are also things a caucus can do, such as take away staff support. Speaker can change a member's seat on the floor, things like that. But the kind of biggest process you could go through would be the ethics process. That would be the main source of discipline for a member, as it is now.
Madam Chair, is there anything in these changes or an existing policy that, in light of that, precludes, let's say, private settlements? And I know we haven't done those. You know, the issues they're having out in D.C., right, where taxpayer money is handed over to cover somebody's tracks. Is there anything that currently precludes that or would preclude that in these changes?
Mr. Weeks?
Madam Chair, Representative Lesch, no.
Okay.
Representative Lesch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, you know, I appreciate you putting these together. I guess from my perspective, and I'm not going to speak at all for Representative O'Neill, but it was really important to me that there be some kind of timeline requirement where we cannot be allowed to scuttle or sit on these things. And maybe based on the nature of the complaint, maybe that could be in certain scenarios appropriate. But I would want the speaker and the minority leader or whomever else to actually have to do something. I want them to have to do something. Because too often we've seen it where it hasn't happened. And as I've stated before as well, members know that a major criterion on whether action gets taken against a particular member around here is based on whether or not we like them. If they're a problem child in either caucus, they either get staff support taken away or an ethics complaint or something like that. And
you sound concerned, Representative Lesch.
What's that?
You sound personally concerned.
Yeah, no, you guys are coming after me. I know that already, but that's beside the point. But point being, having requirements set forth a process, Madam Chair, whereby there is accountability on us. And I really wanted something out of this policy to include the fact that we have to do something. And I don't think this requires us to have to do anything, nor does it address the other piece that compels us to have to do something, and that is the public data piece, which is my thing in civil law. If this stuff can be handled behind closed doors, and on top of it, we're not compelled to be accountable, I'm concerned that some things could not change. And again, I know you've done a lot of work on this, Madam Chair, okay, and I appreciate that. And the work that you've done on your other bill that I've signed on to, too, is a heavy lift. So I'm in no way suggesting that you're not doing your part on this. I'm just saying that I wanted something more out of this.
Thank you, Representative Lesh, and your point is very well taken. I would just say that we do have another piece that we're going to be taking up next, and I'll talk more about that in detail later in 2 minutes after we vote on this. But, you know, we've heard a lot about various task forces and what additional things can be done. I don't view this as necessarily the end of the process or the end of looking at what we can do. The task force that we're going to be voting on is essentially allowing the people that were on the subcommittee to continue work on the issues, including the issue you brought forward during the interim. And maybe I'll just save a little bit for later, but I don't think that it doesn't mean that we can't look to changes in the ethics policy or other things. And what I view this as is a step we can take right now. We're getting close to the end of session. We needed to clearly make some changes now. There might be additional changes or changes to the ethics policy or house rules. And in the next resolution that we're going to be voting on, we're going to have the opportunity to ask staff to continue to work on some of those additional recommendations. And we'll have to meet by December to come up or to see how they've done in implementing some of the things and if they have additional recommendations. So we'll be in good shape for next session to make any additional changes. And so this isn't meant to be just this is all we're going to do necessarily. It's we need to take action now, get a good start, and let our staff have additional time to find out if there's additional things that we should be doing to address those questions and other questions that members may have. So if it's okay if we could move on to other questions, and then we'll get more into that task force for the next resolution. Any other question, members? Okay, seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that R16-2 be adopted. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the R16-2 is adopted. And then next, I'll move that the R17 resolution on workplace safety and respect be adopted. Again, Mr. Weeks, if you could speak to the motion, and then we'll take questions.
Madam Chair and members, the R17 document, the resolution on workplace safety and respect, if you look at lines 5 through 11, the main thing done there is that a task force on workplace safety and respect is created, which would continue through the interim, and it would have the same membership as the current subcommittee on workplace safety and respect, which has to dissolve by rule when we adjourn sine die. Line 12 through 15 is the outline of a community survey, and it requires that human resources and research departments will work together with the task force to develop, administer, and report the results of a community survey about harassment and discrimination at the House of Representatives. 16 through 20 is again directing House Human Resources and other House departments to establish a dedicated phone number and email address for taking reports and concerns and complaints of harassment and discrimination under the policy, something akin to a hotline. And that would be monitored by some qualified and trained House staff. It says at least three, but it would be three or more. 21 through 29 require us to create a dedicated webpage, public-facing webpage on the House's website, specifically dedicated to anti-harassment and discrimination, and what this would have on it at a minimum would be a link to the current version of the policy, a link to the current version of the members and staff to whom reports or complaints can be submitted, as well as a kind of boiled down version of how mostly a member of the public might make a complaint or report under the policy. And it would also have that dedicated email address and dedicated phone number there, together with an explanation of that purpose. And on page 2, lines 4 through 8, talk about training, and this requires House Human Resources and Research Department to propose to the task force options for House member and staff training schedules, and specifically required to include trainings on unconscious bias, respect in the workplace, as well as harassment discrimination training that's focused on how bystanders can act in when they see harassment and discrimination. And finally, on page 2, lines 9 through 13, requires the task force to review the rules and policies that have now been adopted to make sure they're working, iron out any hiccups or problems that immediately arise with the new policy.
Members, any questions? Okay, seeing no questions, I'll move that the R17 resolution on workplace safety and respect be adopted. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails, and the resolution is adopted. Next, Representative Pugh, to you for a motion.
Yes, Madam Chair, I would like to move that the R18-1, the resolution on waiver of dates, be adopted.
Thank you. And if Mr. McCormick is he here to move forward? Oh, sorry. Yes.
Members, Madam Chair, this is the resolution we adopt every year, which allows a little more nimble calendaring of bills on the floor under the current rule. We have to calendar by 5 o'clock the day prior. After we adopt this, you can calendar at any time on either the regular calendar of the day or the fiscal calendar. If you want to use the pre-filing amendment, you still have to use a 2-day filing period.
Any questions or discussion? Representative Fortman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. McCormick. I wasn't paying really close attention while you were speaking. I'm sorry about that. Is this about the normal time of year that we adopt this?
Mr. McCormick?
It feels early to me.
Madam Chair, we have a wide range of dates. Usually we adopt this sometime in late March to mid-April. So.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Seeing none, Representative Pugh renews her motion that the R18-1 resolution waiver of dates be adopted. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails, and the resolution is adopted. Representative Nash, to you.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'd like to move that the 2018 personnel reports be approved.
And Ms. Knight, are you here to speak to that motion? Thank you. Thank you, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, the personnel reports that you have before you represent the appointments, changes in status and terminations that have occurred since the last time these reports were approved in early 2017.
Thank you. Members, any questions? Seeing none, Representative Nash renews his motion that the personnel reports as presented here today, April 25th, 2018, be approved. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. The motion prevails. Seeing no other business today, the meeting is adjourned.